The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. It's the last show of the week. We're already at Friday, and we're finally at the end of this 2 week bracket where every radio show is an hour earlier. It's been a challenge, a little bit stressful. Have you been stressed, Sam? He is nodding in agreement. We have to hurry. Tomorrow night, I guess it would be. Finally, our universe, everything will be realigned properly, and we'll go back to normal time on Monday for those of us here in the European area and probably other regions as well. So looking forward to that time change and getting back to our normal 1 p.m. start on Monday. Well, as for this show, later on in the program, we're going to be talking about an American patriot because on this day, way back in 1775, an American patriot known as Patrick Henry delivered one of the most powerful call to arms in history.
But as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
That's from a Patrick Henry speech. Obviously, that's not Patrick Henry himself. That's someone pretending to be Patrick Henry. But uttering that famous line there at the end of his speech, March 23rd, 1775. We'll come to that, as I say, a little bit later in the program. Well, what would those American patriots, what would the founding fathers of America think of the United States today? What would they think of Washington, D.C., the House of Representatives, the Senate, the White House, all of those government institutions, all the government agencies that are in and around Washington, D.C.? If they were alive today, if Patrick Henry was here today, George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, if they walked the streets of Washington, D.C. today, if they walked the halls of Congress today, what would they think? What would stand out to them? George Washington, he stepped aside after two terms. He could have appointed himself emperor, but he made his sacrifice and then stepped aside so that someone else could be elected as president. As he was stepping aside, by the way, I played this, or not played it, I quoted from it a couple of months ago, I think it was. But as he was stepping aside in his farewell address, he admonished America to avoid the accumulation of debt. You better steer clear of debt. Not only by shunning occasions of expense, he said, but by vigorous exertion in time of peace to discharge the debts which unavoidable wars may have occasioned. You've got to use the time of peace to pay down the debt, to balance the books. Not ungenerously throwing upon posterity the burden which we ourselves ought to bear. It's not generous, President Washington said. It is not generous to throw trillions and trillions of dollars of debt on our posterity. And that's what we're doing. I mean, politicians can call it generosity. You listened to them yesterday, and it's as if they're doing us a favor. They're showing so much compassion. That's what they think. Dr. Walter Williams. He's an economics professor at, George Mason maybe. He said 75% of today's federal spending can be described as Congress taking the earnings of one American to give to another through thousands of handout programs such as farm subsidies, business bailouts, and welfare. So they pat themselves on the back because, well, we're giving to these programs, to these welfare programs. We're bailing out people who are in trouble. We're providing farm subsidies. But they're taking the earnings of other Americans to do it. It's not generous. It's not compassionate. It's immoral. It's unconscionable. It's stealing, plain and simple. It's just laying all of that debt burden. It's not only taking from Americans today, it's laying all of the debt burden on our posterity, just like George Washington said. Don't be ungenerous. Don't ungenerously throw it upon posterity, this burden that we ourselves ought to bear. America's federal debt, not counting all of the unfunded liabilities, that's hundreds of trillions more. But just the federal debt, as we are where we are today, it's now over $21 trillion. We tacked on $1 trillion in about 6 months. I mentioned that yesterday. If time were to go on another 10 years, we'll be in the neighborhood of $38 trillion on the federal debt. And, of course, millions more added to the rolls on Social Security and such. How are we going to pay it? Well, in looking at the way they're congratulating themselves in Washington, I guess they assume we're just going to keep printing it, keep printing off paper. It's as if they're playing Monopoly. They're playing with other people's money. They're playing with fake money, really, if you look at the real value or lack thereof. Here comes a Republican-controlled House Wednesday night. It finally makes public. It releases the details of this $1.3 trillion budget. It's a bill that goes on for more than 2,200 pages. That was posted online Wednesday night, and the House easily approved the measure the next day, the next morning, 256 to 167, after just 16 hours, all of these congressmen and women, they had 16 hours to read through 2,232 pages. You go back to the Obama years, I mean, that was one thing. Every single Republican was up in arms over just how fast, the bills were ramrodded through. Well, we're in a crisis, Obama said. And he had the support. He had the majorities that he needed to just push through trillions and trillions of dollars. And the Republican leadership back then, John Boehner, Paul Ryan, and the others, I mean, they were sounding the alarm saying, hey, we at least you need to give us 72 hours, at least give us 3 days, at least give the American people 3 days so that we can actually see what's in the bill, so that we can actually go through it. Now the Republicans control the House, the Senate, and the White House. They put forward the biggest spending package in the history of America and then ramrod it through in 16 hours. The Senate wasn't that far behind. It was just a few minutes after midnight. And they approved of the plan 65 to 32, I think it was. The Associated Press, it says, a bipartisan tally that underscored the popularity of the compromise which funds the government through September. I mean, the fact that there's so many people from both sides, it shows how bipartisan this effort is. It beefs up military and domestic programs, delivering federal funds to every corner of the country.
It's really a good thing, and I'm excited about it.
He's really excited about it. You can see why. Spend, spend, spend. He loves it. That's the big spending liberal senator from New York, Chuck Schumer. He loves this Republican monstrosity. He loves it. He says the Democrats feel really good about this bill. If Hillary Clinton was in charge, we would love it. They all love it. Nancy Pelosi, they love it.
It's really a good thing.
It's a really good thing.
I'm excited about it.
Well, there he goes. He's excited. 65 to 32 in the Senate. 256 to 167. Well, in his statement before he said about how excited he was, Schumer talked about how they were able to compromise both sides, how they were able to come together. Here's a little bit more from his statement, clip two.
Now, it certainly doesn't have everything Democrats want, and it contains a few things Democrats aren't thrilled about. The same is true of our Republican friends. That is true of all compromises. If each of us stood on our hind legs and said, if I only get everything I want, I'm voting no, we'd be totally paralyzed, and that happens far too often in this body. But somehow on this appropriations bill, this omnibus, that didn't happen. There is remarkable spirit of give and take in the room.
More like take. A remarkable spirit of give and take. Well, I mean, I guess take from Americans, take from our children, and give it to all these social programs. I mean, that quote I just gave to you from Walter Williams, you know, taking from 75% of this amounts to taking from Americans and giving it to other Americans through all these social programs. It's not even that, really. You look at all the, you go through it item by item. $10 million for disadvantaged Egyptian students. $1 million for the World Meteorological Organization, wherever that is. $10 million for the UN environmental programs. $12 million for scholarships for Lebanon. Lebanon, Egypt, the UN. We've got $12 million in military funding for Vietnam. How about if we tack on another $20 million for Middle East Partnership Initiative Scholarship Program? It's all in there. 2,232 pages. 2,232 pages. $3.5 million. In nutrition assistance to Laos, finally. $15 million in developmental assistance to China. These are some of the details that no one had time to read and that no one cares to eliminate. It's more than taking from Americans and giving to other Americans. It's just throwing money to the wind. Oh, well, there's a lot of self-interest here as well. The Washington Free Beacon, it has a piece about how Congress, as part of this spending bill, it's giving itself a raise. It's giving itself a bonus. The Senate increased its total salaries of officers and employees by $12.6 million. $12.6 million increasing its salary as part of this 2,200-page bill. Says, aside from giving their own institutions a bonus, the omnibus also gives away millions to prevent elderly falls, promote breastfeeding, and fight excessive alcohol use. The legislation increases the Senate budget to $919 million, up $48 million from fiscal year 2017, a $48 million increase. its own budget. Salaries of staffers in the Senate are also set for an increase. Division 1 of the legislation breaks down the total salaries of officers and employees, which are being raised from $182 million in 2017 to $194 million in the final bill. That's an increase of $12.58 million.
It's really a good thing, and I'm excited about it.
There's a lot of people excited about it in Washington. At Congress, there's congressmen, there's staffers, a lot of excited people. The Senate also increased its expense account, as expense allowances are going from $177,000 to $192,000, an increase of $15,000. That's for their expense accounts. Well, it goes on and on. Another $15 million goes to study high obesity counties, and an increase of $5 million for the CDC program that seeks to address obesity in counties by leveraging the community extension services provided by land-grant universities who are mandated to translate science into practical action and promote healthy lifestyles. It concludes with another statement about the two million that goes to prevent elderly falls, to prevent elderly people from falling. Incidentally, it also removed, someone had put in, hey, let's also beef up the how we address sexual harassment in Washington or on Capitol Hill. They took that out of the bill. Someone, when going through the details, said, "Well, now we don't want to publicize our internal sins too much. But let's pay everyone. Let's make sure we all have good salaries. Let's make sure that we pour billions and billions of dollars into these international programs, even. But not police ourselves." There's a lot of bad behavior that goes on in those halls. It's not just reckless and wild spending. Here they are. They can't agree on anything. They're always fighting. They're always bitterly divided, except when it comes to spending.
It's really a good thing, and I'm excited about it.
They're all excited. They all think it's a really good thing. They all came together. Somehow, a lot of times we can't do it, but as Schumer said, somehow on this appropriation bill, on this omnibus, it didn't happen, the division. There was this remarkable spirit of give and take. We came together. There was unity. Notice what he went on to say. This is clip 4.
This spending bill, this spending agreement, brings that era of austerity to an unceremonious end and represents one of the most significant investments in the middle class in decades.
The era of austerity. I think I skipped over a clip where he explained the era that he was talking about. The Obama era. He sees that as an era of austerity. Let me just back up and play for you clip 3.
Overall, we Democrats are very happy with what we've been able to accomplish on a number of very important priorities to the middle class in America. Infrastructure, education, opioid treatment, mental health, child care. For nearly a decade, the middle class in this country has suffered from a needless and self-imposed austerity, limiting investment of all of the things that create good-paying jobs and improve the working conditions of Americans, improve the lives of Americans.
For nearly a decade, that just takes you right back to the year President Obama was campaigning, Senator Obama, and then he came in and immediately spent $1 trillion in a matter of months. We haven't seen anything like it until today. 10 years, nearly a decade, the middle class, according to Chuck Schumer, a United States senator from New York, the middle class in the United States has suffered from a needless and self-imposed austerity. And finally, the way he sees it, finally it's coming to an end. an unceremonious end. Only in the upside-down world of today can the Obama years be seen as years of austerity. Where does it stop? This is a train that's not on its way to a wreck. It's wrecked. It's broken. Congress is broken. That's the truth. Only a few will say anything. Just a few. Really, they're not even saying that much across the nation. Everyone just gets caught up in this remarkable spirit of give and take. As long as everybody gets a little piece of the action, there's plenty of unity. Here's the last one I have of Senator Schumer, clip five.
So, again, that era of austerity, which so hurt middle-class Americans, is coming to an unceremonious end because this bill represents one of the most significant investments in the middle class in decades. For these reasons, I'm confident that this agreement will pass both houses of Congress, hopefully with comfortable margins, hopefully in a bipartisan way.
And they did. They did. Comfortable margins, for sure. And now it's off to the White House. Only President Trump stands in the way of this obscenity. Only the White House stands in the way. And, I mean, if we're to believe press reports, the statement that Sarah Huckabee Sanders put out on Wednesday, it seems like the president's on board with this. And conservatives, true conservatives, who were quite happy with the president's work in 2017, well, they're waking up to a brutal 2018 as the government, the size of the federal government, just increased by about 13% with the snap of a finger. And, you know, speaking of the president, he put in for a $25 billion price tag on building the wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. You know about that. If you were paying attention in 2016, I mean, that was sort of at the heart of all of the campaign speeches. We're going to build a big, beautiful wall. So the president of the United States, the Republican president, with a Republican House, with a Republican Senate majority, with Republicans controlling every branch of government, he asked for $25 billion to start building the wall. And in this 2,232-page bill, there's $1.6 billion set aside for, well, a physical barrier, but it's not a wall. Of that $1.6 billion, $640 million goes toward repairing a border fence along the Rio Grande Valley, but specifically not any kind of a concrete wall. In fact, it spells it out in this bill, 2,200 pages. You have this much. It's just a little compared to what you actually wanted. You have this much, $1.6 billion toward border security, not $25 billion. But this bill specifically stipulates that you can't build any kind of a concrete wall. Oh, no. Nancy Pelosi, she's as excited as Chuck Schumer. She put out a statement yesterday congratulating both sides and the Democrats in particular who fought with integrity, she said. And this is from her statement. Democrats won explicit language restricting border construction to the same see-through fencing that was already authorized under current law. The bill does not allow any increase in deportation officers or detention beds. So she's bragging because they kept that out of the legislation. Well, President Trump, he also asked to slash funding on the Environmental Protection Agency. He wanted that cut by 30%. Didn't happen. Planned Parenthood, fully funded. The Gateway Project, this tunnel that they're building from New Jersey to New York, he wanted that nixed. That's it. That's still in there. We've got to spend. We've got to spend. Tunnels, bridges, the thing in Laos, Egypt, Vietnam. How is this happening? How can this happen? What would George Washington think? What about Patrick Henry? Give me liberty, not tyranny. Give me liberty or give me death. Give us the freedom. Give us smaller government and more freedom. It's happening. All of this is happening because of the sins of the people. We're all to blame. You can't pin it on the White House. You can't pin it on Republicans, Democrats. Benjamin Franklin, this was at the conclusion of the Constitutional Convention, 1787. And he was coming forward basically saying, you know, I agree, we need a constitution. We do need a federal government. Franklin said this. Well, at the time he was too sick to actually speak this himself. He had someone else read it for him. But he said here in his speech, I agree to this Constitution with all its faults, if they are such, because I think a general government necessary for us. And there is no form of government but what may be a blessing to the people if well administered. And I believe farther that this is likely to be well administered for a course of years and can only end in despotism, as other forms have done before it, when the people shall become so corrupted as to need despotic government, being incapable of any other. The people today, the people of America today, they're incapable of being ruled by any other except this kind of corrupt, despotic government. It's the sins of the people, a people laden with iniquity, as the prophet Isaiah said in chapter 1. We're looking at Judges 21 and verse 25, that dark period that ancient Israel was in, when everyone just did what seemed right in their own eyes. Corruption, sickness, from head to toe. Peter Schweizer, he's the guy that wrote the book Clinton Cash. He's got another book coming out where he just talks about how so many of these politicians have just become fabulously wealthy. Not just the politicians in Washington, but their family, their children, their offspring, their relatives. I forget the name of the book, but he was on Fox and Friends, I believe, yesterday morning. And listen to this exchange as he's just kind of summarizing the content of his forthcoming book. This is clip 6.
So I think the people are very interested and concerned about corruption in Washington, D.C. If you look at the Obama administration, people, I think, are going to be shocked what the Biden family was involved in and what associates and, in some cases, family members of Secretary of State John Kerry were involved in. Major deals involving the Chinese government, not Chinese private companies, the Chinese government.
Senator Mitch McConnell, Elaine Chao, too, right?
Yes, that's right. Senator Mitch McConnell as well. Again, big deals with the Chinese government that have made these families.
Example, something shocking.
Well, so in December of 2013, Vice President Biden flies to Beijing. With him on the plane is his son, Hunter Biden. Very sensitive issues, the South China Sea. The Chinese are expanding their power base, trade issues, economic conflict, etc. Joe Biden is criticized on that trip for basically going soft on Beijing. Mm-hmm. 10 days after they leave, Hunter Biden, his son, scores a $1.5 billion, with a B, billion-dollar private equity deal from the Chinese government.
That's Peter Schweizer on Fox and Friends talking about his new book, which is Secret Empires is the name of it. But it's both sides of the aisle, as he brings out. Democrats, Republicans alike, lining their pockets. And then look at the consensus that they reached yesterday or early this morning in the case of the Senate. Nice, comfortable margins. No more talk about fiscal restraint. No, we're in charge now. The Republicans are in charge. We can finally tighten our belts. None of that. It is spend, spend, spend. There's a story at CNS from yesterday. Real state and local income, sales, and property taxes all hit records in 2017, according to data released by the Census Bureau. It's record high levels. I mean, President Trump, his administration comes in and makes some cuts in taxes, finally. But you put it all together, state, local, sales, property taxes, federal income tax. It says state and local governments collected a record, what is this, $404 billion in individual income taxes in 2017, according to the Census Bureau. It says state, well, just skipping on a little further. At the same time, state and local governments collected a record $573 billion in property taxes in 2017. Before 2017, the largest property tax collections took place in 2016. So we're paying more taxes than ever before. And they just keep going up and up and up. Where does it end? We've talked before about the Roman Empire and how right toward the end, boy, there was big government, big, massive, bloated bureaucracy. And how did it end for Rome? The Bible says a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. That's what George Washington was getting at in his farewell address. Don't ungenerously throw upon posterity the burden which we ourselves ought to bear. Don't put that on our children. Go to the ant, you sluggard, it says in the Proverbs. Consider her ways and be wise. She provides her meat in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. There's a passage in Luke 12 where Jesus talked about, you know, the individual that's got a bumper crop and thinks, I can't even spend all of this, so I'm going to build up these barns, load them up, and just take it easy and just live off of my tremendous wealth and use it all on myself. We're rich. We're increased with goods, they're saying in Washington. We've got enough for everybody. We've got enough to fund every program. Jesus warned against that. He said in, this is Luke 12, verse 19, "And I will say to my soul, soul, you have much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, you fool, this night your soul shall be required of you. Then whose shall those things be, or whose shall those things be, which you have provided? So he that lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." See, we see this happening. This spirit, this attitude, it happened in the Laodicean era of God's church. It's happening to our nations. People raiding the treasury for themselves. Christ said it'll catch up to you. It's ruining the nation. Congress is broken. It's not going to have a good outcome. Our forefathers warned us of this. The Bible warns against it. We better take heed to these warnings of God. I'm hoping later on in this year to pull together more, just straight from the Bible, about God's economy and how it's going to be set up in the wonderful world tomorrow. Of course, Mr. Armstrong spends a fair bit of time on that subject in his book on the subject of the world tomorrow. In any event, as I was telling the class this morning, I really do appreciate, when looking at some of these things that we see happening to our nations, it just makes you appreciate God's truth all the more, because God's truth, God's instruction, God's laws, it makes you so happy, and it's there's so it, you can be so content and satisfied when immersing yourself into the truth of God. You look at what man has done. You look at the laws that man passes, and it makes for a lot of frustration. Unless, of course, you're just looking at it completely selfishly, like Chuck Schumer, and saying, hey, this is great. This is awesome. We're all having a ball here.
It's really a good thing, and I'm excited about it.
You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. One may blind his eyes to existing facts and trends and say the world cannot get any worse than it already is. Or, if we just ignore the conditions and don't worry, perhaps they'll go away. But these conditions and trends won't just go away. Not unless they are caused to go away. The scriptures of the Holy Bible, the inspired revelation of the Supreme God, have foretold today's world conditions and trends, and give us the advance news of coming peace on earth, of universal prosperity, of happiness and joy, of veritable utopia. This is the good news of the world tomorrow, and it is absolutely sure. This coming world is vividly described in our booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. Bible prophecy explains in detail how God will intervene to save mankind from destroying himself. Jesus Christ will return to earth, putting an end to the rule of man and restore God's government on earth. To learn much more about this prophesied utopia, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
On this day, well over 200 years ago, an American patriot delivered one of the most famous speeches of the Revolutionary War era. That man was named Patrick Henry, and according to one source, he let out the most powerful call to arms in history, or certainly one of them. As I say, it was on March 23rd, 1775. Real clear history. Recently listed this speech, Patrick Henry's speech, as fifth on the list of the top 10 speeches in history. Pretty famous speech. These words, particularly the words there at the end of his speech, they inspired the American patriots to fight to the death, if need be, for liberty, for freedom. And in the 200 years or so, I guess it's more like 230-something years since that speech, those words continue to inspire Americans today, at least some. It's much like the shot heard round the world. It's a speech that had an impact far beyond what Patrick Henry probably ever thought it would. Again, a lot of people are very familiar with the famous conclusion of the speech, but not as many know about the history behind it. America's original 13 colonies, they had been disgruntled for a number of years leading up to this speech in 1775. There was some American opposition to British rule as far back as 1765 when Parliament passed the Stamp Act, and the Americans thought this was unfair. They were being taxed unfairly. They didn't have any representatives in Parliament to argue their case. No taxation without representation. People are familiar with that phrase as well. And after some strenuous objection on the part of the Americans, Parliament eventually repealed the Stamp Act, and so things settled down for a time. And then when the Tea Act was passed in 1773, that set off more confrontations. This is from history.com. It says, most colonists quietly accepted British rule until Parliament enacted the Tea Act in 1773, which granted the East India Company a monopoly on the American tea trade. Viewed as another example of taxation without representation, militant patriots in Massachusetts organized the Boston Tea Party, which saw British tea valued at some £10,000 dumped into the Boston Harbor. They didn't want taxation without representation. They didn't want to be burdened down with oppressive taxes. It says, Parliament, outraged by the Boston Tea Party, well, it just goes and talks about how that Britain cracked down on the colonies, particularly Massachusetts. And then, well, that led to the Boston Massacre, and then on it went from there, switching over to the history place. This is, again, about Patrick Henry's famous speech. It says here, the First Continental Congress met in the fall of 1774 in Philadelphia with 56 American delegates representing every colony except Georgia. It says, on September 17th, the Congress declared its opposition to the repressive acts of Parliament, saying that they are not to be obeyed, and are promoted, and also promoted the formation of local militia units. Thus, economic and military tensions between the colonists and the British escalated. It says in February of 75, a provincial Congress was held in Massachusetts, during which John Hancock and Joseph Warren began defensive preparations for a state of war. The British Parliament then declared Massachusetts to be in a state of rebellion. On March 23rd, in Virginia, the largest colony in America, a meeting of the colony's delegates was held in St. John's Church in Richmond. Resolutions were presented by Patrick Henry, putting the colony of Virginia into a posture of defense, embodying, arming, and disciplining such a number of men as may be sufficient for that purpose, he said. Before the vote was taken on his resolutions, Henry delivered the speech below, imploring the delegates to vote in favor. This is what led up to his famous speech. He spoke without any notes, in a voice that became louder and louder, climaxing with the now famous ending. It says, following his speech, the vote was taken in which his resolutions passed by a narrow margin, and thus Virginia joined the American Revolution. It says, Patrick Henry was a Virginian, a lawyer, an orator, and a fiery patriot. He also had a strong belief in the Bible and God. Notice how many, the History Place, commenting on Patrick Henry's speech. We're not going to play the entire speech for you. I think it's something like 8 minutes, but we've got the last couple of minutes here to play his speech as read by Richard Schumann. But let me just finish this bit here from the History Place. It says, notice how many references to God there are in this inspiring but fairly short speech. I counted 6 direct references to God. as well as a couple fairly overt scriptural references. So here it is then, the conclusion to Patrick Henry's speech, his famous speech from this day, March 23rd in 1775.
They tell us, sir, we are weak, unable to cope with so formidable an adversary. But when shall we be stronger? Will it be the next week or the next year? Will it be when we are totally disarmed and a British guard shall be stationed in every house? Shall we gather strength by irresolution and inaction? Shall we acquire the means of effectual resistance by lying supinely on our backs and hugging the delusive phantom of hope until our enemy shall have bound us hand and foot? Sir, we are not weak if we make a proper use of that means which a gracious God hath placed in our power. 3 millions of people, armed in the holy cause of liberty, and in such a country as that which we possess, are invincible by any force which our enemy can send against us. Besides, sir, we shall not fight our battles alone. There is a just God who presides over the destinies of nations, and who will raise up friends to fight our battles for us. The battle, sir, is not to the strong alone. It is to the vigilant, the active, the brave. Besides, sir, we have no election. If we were base enough to desire it, it is now too late to retire from the contest. There is no retreat but in submission and slavery. Our chains are forged. Their clanking may be heard on the plains of Boston. The war is inevitable, and let it come. I repeat it, sir, let it come. It is in vain to extenuate the matter. Gentlemen may cry, peace, peace, but there is no peace. The war is actually begun. The next gale that sweeps from the north will bring to our ears the clash of resounding arms. Our brethren are already in the field. Why stand we here idle? What is it that gentlemen wish? What would they have? Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
On this day, in 1775, Patrick Henry, well, it was not long after that famous speech, March of 1775, when the first shots, the first volleys of the American Revolutionary War were fired. And then, well, hopefully, many of you, at least those of you in America, know a bit of the history that followed. Think about the sacrifice that those founding fathers made to get the United States of America established, to establish a government, to build a nation. Think about how many things they gave up. Think about when they had to tighten their belts for the good of the nation. That's some unique leadership, as David McCullough wrote in 1776. I mean, it's remarkable how many great statesmen were right there in those 13 colonies in the 1770s. At that time, at that moment, when America needed leadership, courageous leadership, unselfish leadership, leaders who were willing to sacrifice for the greater good, for God and nation. I was telling the doctrines class this morning, I mean, this is really the lesson, certainly one of them, that God wants to get across to us during the Passover and the days of unleavened bread. Looking to Jesus Christ, the author and the finisher of our salvation. looking to Jesus Christ and that sacrifice, crying out to God for the help and the power that we need to resist against sin, the way that Jesus Christ resisted against sin. That's the cause of all of our problems. We're turning to despotism in Washington and in other nations of Israel because we as a people, we've become so corrupted. So much corruption, so much greed, so much selfishness, so much vanity. And where is God? Six references in that speech. Six direct references to God in an 8-minute speech. And a couple of other scriptural references. You heard one of them there. Peace, peace, but there is no peace. The war has begun. He said it is only in this way that we can hope to arrive at truth and fulfill the great responsibility which we hold to God and our country. What about that? Something like that coming out of Washington, D.C. today. The great responsibility that we have before God and before our country. We're not fighting this fight alone. We have the God of hosts on our side. We're backed by the great omnipotent God who presides over the destinies of nations, who will raise up friends if he has to fight our battles for us. That's one of America's founders, one of America's best-known patriots, Patrick Henry. March 23rd, 1775. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with a couple emails that have come in over this past week. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. You can email us if you like, td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet Magazine. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
I think we have time for a couple of emails here. One coming in response to the Parkland school shooting. I think that was addressed in Joel Hilliker's Trumpet Brief a couple of days ago. It says here, thank you for the Trumpet Brief and the special episode on the real reason behind the Parkland school shooting. The episode was quite sobering and informative. Your closing remarks, as you draw the listeners to how God dealt with evil when Satan rebelled, was most inspiring. I wonder how human civilization would have been if God didn't raise up a man like Winston Churchill to deal with the Nazi psychopath Adolf Hitler. Even though a lot of humans ended up losing their lives because evil was cuddled for so long, it says, for closure, I'll quote from the Trumpet Brief, evil must not be ignored, excused, or accommodated. It must be eliminated, or it will destroy us. Another one here comes in response to, I believe this is Brad McDonald's piece that went out, a note to those with searching questions. It says here, thank you. Yes, I'm well acquainted with that small voice, that still small voice. Case in point, it was January 1979. I had just left my house and turned on the radio and heard breaking news. The state of California moves on the Worldwide Church of God. I'd been receiving the plain truth for a year and a half. My first thought was, oh no, what have I been following? That very instant in my mind, that very instant in my mind was God's church would be persecuted. He says here, later, I was asked to make out my tithes to a man and send the checks to Tucson instead of Pasadena. Once again, the voice said, follow God. It says later, I would like to let you know I am soon to be 68. In spite of this, I'm skipping down a little bit further on. Yet I'm not alone. I still have that soft voice to guide me. Once again, thank you all for everything God does through his church. Have a wonderful Passover and days of unleavened bread. Sorry for being so lengthy. Well, that's not a problem. We appreciate your comments. We appreciate all of your comments. If you'd like to send some feedback to the program and possibly have it read live on the air, you can send those to td@kpcg.fm. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for joining us all week long, and we'll see you Monday.